Dan Mangan, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver and surrounding university area. They want to be loved by robots, need love too.
They want to be loved by you. Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Isolation, and at my feet eternity. Hello?
Well, well, well. Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we're really, really glad to have you. Food is something that is absolutely imperative. It can make or break an occasion. It can make something really super duper special. It can be really, really brutal. And in Vancouver, we are really, really spoiled. We've got more restaurants per capita than anywhere else in North America. But it's one of those things, especially when it comes to dating, special occasions. So whether or not it's your first date, or whether you've been together with somebody for over 50 years, or whatever that is, and especially the Valentine's Day coming up, food is something we need to think about. So whether or not we're doing a picnic in our bedroom, whether or not we're going for a dinner, or whether or not we're actually bringing someone in to teach us how to cook in our own home, or bringing in a caterer. So I'm really excited to have Michelle Brassen from In the Kitchen Catering on my show tonight. And we're going to be chatting all sorts about things about how food makes a difference in your life and how it can really, really benefit and make you feel really good. And especially as we've got a lot of special occasions coming up, Valentine's Day for one of them. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So food, you see it a lot, don't you, with your catering, that just how food can make or break an occasion.
I think it really can bring people together. Good food is a chatting point. When people are happy and relaxed with what they're eating, It can really set the tone for an event. And if you're doing something that's a really fun cocktail party, wedding, that can really enliven your guests and bring just a whole fun theme to the night.
That's true. It really does make a huge difference, because I think all of us have been to some weddings where the food has been dreadful. And I always think back to that scene. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Love Actually, which is one of my all-time favorites, where the guy is trying to pick up the caterer, and he starts making fun of all the food and then finds out that it was her company that actually made it.
And I think we've all been to a wedding where we have to go to the drive-through afterwards. And that is not a fun thing to do.
No.
You're in your fancy clothes, and you end up going to a junky place, the only thing open that late at night in Vancouver. And I just feel like people should go home from a fantastic event completely happy and with full bellies and nothing but love for where they've just actually been, and a testament to the love that brought people together.
And that's really important. And I think food is, it's something to think about even when we start off, like meeting somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver is, I always think of it as a really, we're very much a coffee culture in a lot of ways. So let's go for coffee, where a lot of times people aren't quite sure whether or not something's a date or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be really interesting perhaps having a first date that perhaps actually taking a cooking class together could be quite interesting, because you'd find out really fast in terms of the teamwork how that's going to work.
Absolutely, and whether your date is a suitable partner, if you can't cook but they're great in the kitchen, or vice versa. I married a chef as well, and it is a fantastic thing to be able to come home and have a great meal on the table. Some of my friends' husbands cannot cook, and that is definitely something you need to know before you get into a relationship with someone long term.
That is very true. Except I used to be the one who couldn't cook. My boyfriend's had to slowly teach me in the last year. So,
well, as long as you are willing, then that is a really good thing.
I'm willing, and it's actually been really neat. For years, for me personally, I've had an interesting relationship with food. My dad used to write reviews for the Vancouver Sun. So growing up, my meals were either Campbell's soup, or it was the exact opposite, where we were going out for some fancy schmancy dinner, and my dad would have his really thick glasses on and trying to disguise himself so he'd look different from his picture in the photo. Wouldn't be able to do that present day with all the internet and everything else. But
Very true.
Yeah, and it was quite interesting. So my palate was quite diverse in terms of what I liked. And so for a very long time, until a really dear friend pointed out to me that, Caroline, you're practically 40, so you should finally actually let go of the excuse that your dad was a food critic and you weren't allowed to cook in the kitchen, and actually start doing something about it.
I think it's important for people to have all kinds of ranges of food.
Mm-hmm.
We eat Annie's mac and cheese and organic chicken hot dogs, but we also, you know, make things like butternut squash risotto.
Mm.
Our kids are exposed to all levels and kinds of food, and I think they need to learn to get comfortable in the kitchen, too.
And how would you propose in terms of getting people who are a little bit freaked out comfortable in the kitchen?
I think you just need to start simple.
Okay.
Get a really good cookbook that explains things really well, that makes you feel at ease and not like overwhelmed. Some books are really wordy and long, and those can really make you feel stressed out about cooking. But you know, some people do like every single exact instruction to be able to get through a recipe. I myself like less to read. That makes it simpler for me. Canadian Living cookbooks are a really great way to start, I think. Their recipes are always tested till perfect, so you don't really have to stress about something that's going to work. Some recipe books are not tested, and you can really have a disaster in the kitchen, and it's often not your fault at all.
Okay.
And Vija's cookbook is a really great one as well.
And that's nice to be able to support local as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Vija's is really great for Indian food. If you want to try a new kind of cuisine, their recipes are really well written.
Mm.
One of my favorite cookbooks of all time.
I'll have to take a look at that. I'm very lucky because we live fairly close to Vija's, so
nice.
I like sneaking into Ragouli, which isn't quite the same thing because I'm able to purchase a lot of it and all the sauces and just basically heat a lot of it up, which is fairly straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never gone from scratch, and I always see it when I go to Chapters. So
it's great, and there's lots of great local food stores here, like Famous Foods on Kingsway, that has every spice under the sun. If you can't find it there, it doesn't exist.
That's really neat. I know sometimes with spices, I end up substituting. I'm getting better at that. I used to be where it had to be exact, and I would get confused. I started off with Martha Stewart because I thought that would be really great, and I got really confused. Just I didn't know what some of the words were when I'd read something. And
that is hard.
Mm-hmm. But finally, I found Jamie Oliver's stuff was really great, but as well as that, I also found that sometimes for certain recipes, I can actually go on YouTube.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really neat then if it describes what dicing is, which for a long time I didn't know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it wasn't rolling the dice, but when it came to dicing onions, etc., and I just wasn't quite familiar with all the vocabulary.
You know, that is the first thing we start with in cooking school, learning how to dice an onion and all the different cuts. So really, anybody is learning at the same level.
Okay. So it's like the Julia and Julia, I don't know if you saw that or not, where she's practicing, where she gets better than everybody else in class by the end of it.
It does take practice to be able to chop that fast and that precisely. It's still not my favorite thing to do.
So if somebody was going to do something, say, for Valentine's Day, maybe they wanted to propose to somebody and they wanted to bring a caterer in, what are some of the things they should think about, like for making a really special meal?
They should think about food that has meaning to them, I think. Maybe somewhere they went on vacation, they had those kinds of foods, or, you know, a restaurant where they went out for dinner and they had a special occasion. Those kinds of things really bring back memories. We've all had that time where you smell something and it takes you back instantly to a moment in time, whether it was your grandmother's kitchen or a vacation in Maui. Food really brings memories back. So I think that making something very personal is really important for a special occasion, like an engagement or Valentine's Day.
I was just thinking of that for perhaps a proposal or something like that.
That would be wonderful. And it's much more comforting and I can't think of the word, but more intimate when you're in your own home, somewhere that, you know, you may have built together and brought your, you know, your two selves together. Mm. Instead of being in a restaurant with a bunch of other people, you can really say the things that you want to say, I think, and, mm-hmm. and get across, you know, the love and the meaning behind proposing.
I think that's important, especially something like a proposal, because I have to say, whenever I chat to some of my girlfriends who get newly engaged, it's one of the first questions is, how did he propose?
Mm-hmm. It's a really important thing, mm-hmm. and I know that men sweat over it a lot, too.
Yes, they do. I've had many male friends call me before they propose and get quite freaked out about it, so I imagine, because it really is, it's there is either a yes or a no, pretty much, with that, so.
Yes.
Even
and
a maybe.
No, then, you know, that is a big no to mm-hmm. get. Men yeah. don't like rejection any more than women do.
No, and men will go out of their way, and according to one of our life coaches we've had on before, just men will go out of their way to avoid feeling shame.
Mm.
And if they expect a certain result and they don't get it, sometimes that hits shame right away. Whereas women, we tend to avoid feeling fear if we can. And so with that, especially something like a proposal, which can be really, really, really huge. So it's really important to create the safe space. So in terms of somebody who's proposing and say they wanted to have us the special meal and they'd be sitting down, so say they're engaging you to do that. And so you mentioned picking things that are personal. Would you be there perhaps with that, or would you prep it beforehand so then that way it would make them look like they actually made it themselves?
I can do either or. If people are comfortable having me there to serve them and take care of them, I would be honored. That would be fantastic. What a great way to spend an evening is helping facilitate an engagement. But if someone just wanted, you know, everything prepped so that they could finish it off and truly just have it, the two of them alone, mm-hmm. well, that would be great too. And if they wanted to keep it a secret that they didn't cook all those things, that would be just so
I guess they'd find out once they actually got married.
Yeah. I could recreate the meal every Valentine's Day.
Which that could be really neat, actually.
No one would be the wiser. I think that's a good white lie.
That could be a really nice white lie, actually. If they wanted to do something a little bit more like say, having you in there and doing it as a cooking class, because I know couples' cooking classes are becoming fairly popular, what would that, what is that like?
It's actually really fun. If they okay. just wanted it to be the two of them, mm-hmm. then they can get involved as much as they want to and get their hands dirty and make things and really have a good experience with handling the food and preparing food themselves. I've done group couple classes that have been really fun where, you know, two or three couples are really involved and maybe two or three couples just want to lounge and be fed fantastic food that their friends made. That's a really fun experience too.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause people, you know, come to an event with all kinds of different expectations or levels of interest and you know, food really does make people chat and have a good time and it's a really great talking point. So I think for one couple to do it alone would mm-hmm. be a really fun and intimate experience.
I think it is too. I'm really lucky where, as I was mentioning before, I tend to pick recipes really, really directly off the internet. And now I'm getting better at just playing and just tasting something and seeing what it actually needs. Mm. Whereas my boyfriend's great where he'll come home and he'll try it and he ends up adding all sorts of stuff and just starts pulling things out of the cupboards. And the next thing I know, it tastes absolutely just even more amazing.
Wow, that's very different than my house, where because my husband's a chef, mm-hmm. when one person is in the kitchen, the other one stays out.
Interesting. Okay.
And we, you know, occasionally we'll collaborate on things, mm-hmm. and I often ask his opinion. That's very important to me because he's really good at what he does mm-hmm. as well. But for the most part, we sort of keep to ourselves and pick one person to cook.
That can be really nice then, so one person gets to be spoiled.
Yes, but we do really involve our kids, and that's really important.
How would you recommend for parents if they wanted to get their kids involved so they develop healthy relationship with food?
I think just pull up a chair to the kitchen counter and start with them watching you. When my kids were really, really little, I had just had them in their high chair while I would be cooking something. And that's just the place to begin. So they're watching you all the time. Mm-hmm. And for vegetables, you know, there's so many picky kids these days. Have them help cook, because the pride that they get from making something mm-hmm. really goes a long way towards having them eat it. And vegetables that can be bitter, like broccoli or kale, kids will be much more receptive to those if they've done it themselves. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, add a dash of honey or something to sweeten it so that they enjoy it more, because smaller kids actually have more taste buds towards bitter, mm-hmm. so they taste things differently than adults do.
That makes so much sense.
And they, you know, just get them, you know, touching things in their hands in very early, because, you know, my son uses a grater, and he's been doing that since he was about two. But I know parents who are, you know, freaked out by that, and I don't think you need to be. They might get a scrape or a cut, but they'll learn and they'll never do it again. They'll figure out what happens if they don't take care or caution. And mm-hmm. they do learn quickly, and it's very important for them to learn.
What would you recommend if somebody was going to have the night out and they've been together for a long time and they do have children and they want to create a romantic night?
Babysitters are key. They are hard to find. Good babysitters are hard to find. But I think planning and just being able to relax is really important. Mm. And know your comfort level of going out. We only go out to sort of family places with kids.
Okay.
So for me and my husband, when we want to do it just by ourselves, going somewhere fancier that we would never take their kid and take our kids is really a nice treat.
Okay. And if someone was going to get a babysitter, maybe perhaps drop it, if it was possible, dropping them off at their parents, and they want to have a really romantic night at home, what are some things they could do to set the mood and basically have it so it's going to be a sexy night, so they don't have to go and fight traffic, in terms of, you know, having to fight and make sure they get there exactly on time at the restaurant to have the reservation, where they're getting pushed out because the second wave of people, because Valentine's Day is one of the most popular days of the year to go out.
Mm-hmm. I think foods that are really touch-friendly, so things you're eating with your hands can be really sensual. Things that have different textures, those can go a long way. Chocolate, of course.
Mm-hmm.
you could do a whole chocolate-themed menu, which would be really fun, and it doesn't even have to be all sweet. You could do a steak and your sauce could have just a hint of chocolate in it.
Oh, wow.
Chocolate goes a long way in a lot of dishes. My husband actually makes really fantastic chili that has a square of unsweetened baker's chocolate in it.
Hmm.
So I think, foods you can touch, shrimp, picking those up and being able to eat those, and anything you're just handling and sharing. Sharing mm-hmm. is really important.
I think sharing's really key, and possibly feeding each other, which could be fun. And it still reminds me of, I grew up in the 80s, and it's very obvious. I was going to say 9.5 weeks, actually, in the kitchen scene where he blindfolds her and keeps feeding her all sorts of stuff from the fridge.
Well, that is the classic food and sex movie.
Definitely. It's pretty awesome, but I think that could be really fun. In regards to that, if you were going to create it, because say you're coming in to do catering, what are some of the things that somebody could do in terms of setting the mood? Because obviously, I'd say music is probably a big one, obviously lighting, and just, I guess, where you're eating, so whether or not creating the kitchen table as if it's fine dining, or whether or not it was going to be a picnic on the floor.
Yes, tablecloths, china, whatever china you're using to have, like, a beautifully set table is really an amazing thing to see. A lot of us have china if you've been married for a while and it does not see the light of day quite often. So bringing that out would be a fantastic thing. And having, candles are always fantastic. flowers, the traditional things. It's cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. Because it really is true.
That's awesome.
And sitting on the floor, I think, is fun too. Sitting at your table on a cushion, something different that maybe you don't do every day.
Okay, so making it special.
Mm-hmm. Switching it up.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's awesome. We're going to take a really, really short break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about what happens after you've chosen the, you've had proposal, and that's hopefully it will be a really positive answer. So she or he said yes, and with that, just in terms of some of the steps from going basically to the proposal to the reception, and some of the things to think about in terms of when you're choosing your catering and picking out food just to make it a very special occasion. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back after this. Funny.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Center offers support services to survivors of sexual assault and other forms of violence, as well as their friends, family members, and partners. They are committed to education and the support of students, staff, faculty, and visitors of all genders. They offer counseling, accompaniments, information, and referrals. They also facilitate specialized workshops and training sessions, develop public education campaigns, and hold special events related to anti-violence work. All services are free and confidential. For more information on programs and services or on volunteer opportunities, visit their website, www.ams.ubc.ca/sa.
I was just thinking that, yeah, because with the corset on and everything, I think I'd die. I can totally imagine that, so. Yeah, I can tell.
The AMS Speakeasy provides information, peer counseling, and crisis support to the UBC community. Speakeasy volunteers are carefully chosen and trained to assist students in dealing with a wide range of issues, including relationship breakups, substance abuse, sexuality, and exam stress. To access our service for information or counseling, drop in to visit our desk on the north side of the sub-concourse. All drop-ins and call-ins are strictly confidential. We also have an online email referral service. If we can't help you, we can refer you to someone who can.
Well, 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 and we are back in Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM. And for some of you, perhaps I never really went away because I didn't turn off my mic. So all through those commercials, you got to hear me speaking and chatting with Michelle from In the Kitchen Catering. So if you're just joining us now, we've been chatting about how food can just create ambiance, how it can make or break an occasion. And one of the biggest occasions that come up these days is a wedding, and it's really important because sometimes with weddings there's a lot of stress. It's a huge step. It's a huge life-altering thing where you've got friends, you've got family. Sometimes there's a lot of politics involved there too, and things can be heated because everybody's got their own vision of what the wedding should be like, even though technically it's two people coming together and two families basically and intermixing. So it's actually a very sacred, really special occasion. And I'm really excited that Michelle is here because I've never had to plan a wedding myself. So it's nice to speak to a woman of experience who does this for a living, who provides wonderful, healthy, and organic food for weddings. So I think it's awesome.
Thank you. I always like to say that a wedding is the biggest party you'll ever plan in your life, but nobody has any experience. It's often the first time, I hope, and the last time, I hope, that you'll ever have to do anything this big. And it's pretty daunting. Mm-hmm. There are so many small things you have to do that add up to a wedding. And it can be really hard to know where to start. So when people come to me, I can help them with things like the venue and liquor licensing laws. There's a lot of avenues to navigate. Mm. I don't help with the relationships or the place seatings. You have to deal with the family politics. But, you know, food is something that brings everyone together. So it's a fun job for me to be able to help with that.
What is one of your favorite moments of this were that you it just kind of felt like, okay, this is exactly why I got into this business?
I have had brides and grooms thank me in their wedding speech. Hmm. And I can't get any better than that. For people to say thank you to me for the food that I, you know, give them during their wedding and their party and celebration, mm-hmm. I'm touched every time I get to cater a wedding, because people are so happy. They poke their head in the kitchen and say that they're having a great time, that they love the food, and you know, food really it brings people together, and it nourishes relationships.
Nourishes relationships. I think that's really key. And one of the things that we talked about on the break, which I really, really, really like, is the fact that you mentioned you do a care package for the bride and groom as well, because a lot of times they don't get to eat.
They don't get to eat a lot of the time. They're so busy talking to everybody. They probably haven't seen a lot of their guests in a long time, especially if people are traveling from other places to see their wedding. And, you know, they're often famished by the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I always put together at a minimum at least desserts or things that they maybe haven't gotten to eat. If it's a cocktail party, if it's a sit-down dinner, I try to do, you know, a full meal for each of them so that when they get home, they can reconnect and just have some moments of quiet and enjoyment between themselves, just having a bite to eat and just, you know, re-energizing.
Definitely, especially if they're about to embark on honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, which I think for those of you guys who weren't listening to the first half of the show, definitely stay tuned with that part because we had some nice tips in there. So in terms of, and just to reiterate, finger foods, stuff with different textures, different tastes, and just playing where it's stuff that you can feed each other so you can really create that intimacy. And what a better time to do that than on your honeymoon, which is really key. I imagine some of the other things that do come up too, especially Vancouver being a very mixed town, just in terms of culturally, that perhaps there may be certain foods that it almost needs to be gone over in terms of what the guests, in terms of perhaps religion sometimes, etc.
Yes, there is. I always like to make sure that all those bases are covered.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I've brought in, say, kosher foods for people who are you know, really strict and follow that. Maybe most of the crowd doesn't, but maybe there's a couple of people that are, and that's really important to make sure all of your guests are taken care of food-wise. You know, there's vegan eaters, there's, you know, people who will eat anything, there's allergies, and I always like to make sure that those people are taken care of. Even if it's, you know, just taking cheese out of a food item so that someone can eat it, I just want to make sure that they're having a good time too.
And I think that's great. And just out of curiosity, I'm going to ask, in terms of vegetarian or vegan selections, what types of things would you recommend, perhaps?
We live in such a great multicultural society in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually really easy to make a lot of different vegan things these
days.
And the availability of things like vegan cheese is just amazing. So it's not hard, actually, to modify dishes a lot of the time so that they are vegan-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
People can really have everything. And what I do a lot of is cocktail weddings. And for those types of parties, you can do, you know, three things with meat and then three things that are vegetarian and then three things that are vegan.
Mm.
And everybody will eat them, and no one will know that they're eating something vegan a lot of the time.
Wow. No, I think that's important. Just that there's all those varieties there. It's really, really key.
Yes, it's really nice. And it's important to make sure that everybody is well fed.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want your guests to feel neglected.
No, definitely not. What made you decide to go into food?
I grew up in a really food-centric household. My dad is French, and his dad was a chef, and my mother is Hungarian, and food was really just an important thing in our house. It was how we showed love and respect and coming together over a family meal. And, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of money. My parents didn't have a lot of money, but we always ate well. And that really just instilled a respect for food for me. Mm. So when I decided to go to cooking school, my parents were really happy. And it just, you know, being able to give people food at some of the best times in their life is really, it's an honor for me. So I always call myself a feeder, and I just love to take care of people with food.
I think that's awesome.
It's a pretty good job.
It's a really good job. You get to be with people for a lot of the really good times.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's always, you know, it's a lot of work, but when it comes together at the end, it's a party. And you can't help but be in a good mood when you're around people who are celebrating a milestone, like a wedding or a 75th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I often do big birthday parties because when people get to that age, you know, 60, 70, 80, they don't need a new thing. They don't need something for their birthday. So to have a party to celebrate, you know, their achievements in life and bring all of their family and friends together in one place is much more important and meaningful to them.
And I'm totally inclined to agree with that. Last year we did a surprise party for my dad, actually, so just a small one, and it helped him reconnect with a lot of his friends, and so he's actually been getting out of the house more, and it's really good to see, just better humored, etc., and which it's lovely.
That's awesome.
Because people definitely need people.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. I think that's something we forget, especially as we do, as much as we've got like Facebook, we've got Twitter, we've got LinkedIn, and all those types of social media. And I'm a huge social media freak, but I think we sometimes are isolated as a society, and it's really important for us to connect. Vancouver Foundation actually just produced a study called the Vital Signs Report, and that report really stresses just how imperative it is that people feel that they belong to a community, and just what a huge impact that makes on their life. And so I can totally see that, especially when you get people together, people who have known each other for a really long time, and they're able to celebrate people's successes. And even if it's a not-so-happy occasion where it's remembering somebody because they've passed on, where they're getting together, and just that connection. Because I think it's really important that we need to connect with other human beings to feel alive.
Mm-hmm. You should never grieve alone if that's the case of what you're going through. Mm-hmm. And to be able to connect with people for any occasion is really important.
Mm-hmm. If you could wave a magic wand and change something about the way they teach about food and relationships in school system, what would you like to change?
You know, I don't have any experience with our school system these days so much yet because my kids aren't in school. When I was in school, I had a really great cooking class. And that was really fun. But I have taught at community centers in Vancouver kids cooking classes.
Okay.
And it has just blown me away. The kids, when they start, it was for 9 to 11-year-olds, and I did it for 3 seasons. And they start, and they don't know that macaroni and cheese doesn't come out of a box. And so I really tried hard to make, to do things with them they would normally just buy that were instant. So pizza dough we would make from scratch, and macaroni and cheese and chicken fingers and those kinds of things, and to make them healthy. And the kids were just excited. They would come back every week because it was an 8-week class, and they would say, I made that with my mom. And to reconnect families over dinner is so awesome because I know how much my kids love to eat. So I think it would be fantastic if every school had a cooking program where the kids were involved, even if it's just, you know, something as simple as grating cheese. They're touching the food and they're connecting with it. It didn't come out of a bag already made.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would change.
I think that'd make a huge difference too. Just body image is really, really key in society. And I think perhaps if we start early by encouraging people to just embrace, and as you said, touch, just healthy foods and just that connection that you can have with somebody so they don't, just in terms of isolation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
and, you know, there's programs like Meals on Wheels, and those make a huge impact in a lot of people's lives.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, what is your website?
InTheKitchenCatering.com, and my Facebook page is facebook.com/InTheKitchenCatering.
Nice. And I have a weird question for you, and I was just wondering if you have done, because I know you teach the cooking class as well, where people can bring you into their home, so which can be really fun as well. And I was going to ask about that, just in regards to when you've done that, has it ever been awkward because people are so used to, you know, regarding their kitchen as their own space?
It hasn't. I've never, maybe once or twice in my entire time catering, have I ever encountered, you know, a kind of home where people weren't comfortable. But it wasn't necessarily uncomfortable with, you know, me. It was uncomfortable with
situation.
Uncomfortable with things coming into their kitchen and it not looking immaculate.
Got it. I can envision that.
Some people don't use their kitchens, unfortunately.
No, Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City. She used to actually put sweaters in her stove.
Yes, exactly. And, yeah, some people don't use their kitchens. As, you know, appalled as I am at, you know, some of the fantastic, you know, 2,000-square-foot kitchens that I've seen, and they don't get used, well, that's just life sometimes. And, you know, I've never had any awkwardness, and I always leave kitchens cleaner than they, you know, as clean or cleaner than they were before I came into them. I try and, you know, it's important because it's somebody's home that you're coming into.
Yeah.
So you have to show that respect and make sure that they're comfortable with what you're doing. And then you just feed them and they're happy anyways.
That's true. The other question I was going to ask is if you've ever found when you're teaching a couple's class that the in between the couple where there's ever any friction, just again, because one person's used to being more in the kitchen than the other?
Not really, because you're there to learn. So people are usually excited about that. And what I've done for those kinds of classes is have the couples choose something that they'd like to learn, whether it's making profiteroles, like those little cream puffs. You know, that's really interesting and something that you wouldn't see made every day. Everybody knows the basics of how to make a cookie, probably, or a salad. But when it comes to the more interesting things that you don't see very often, well, the people are really keen to learn that. So I haven't had that yet.
Let's hope that never happens.
I hope so.
But I was curious about that just because I know sometimes there's power struggles just within couples. So I was just curious if that ever manifests itself.
People are usually on their best behavior in front of strangers too.
That is a good point. So
even if it's in their own home.
That is true. That is true. What else would you recommend in terms of, this may sound like a weird thing, but for meal planning and things like that, for people who are, say, very, because again, Vancouver is a very restaurant type of city in that sense, and say somebody wants to learn how to cook, they want to bring you in as well to teach them some things, and one of the things that starts right down to it is the basics, like how to actually figure out what they're eating during the week.
I think it's really great to make things in big batches.
Okay.
So that you can throw some things in the freezer. We do that a lot with soups or casseroles, so that when you are in a rush, all you have to do is pull something out of the freezer. And that way you're saving yourself from, you know, going and getting some takeout. And all you have to do is maybe buy some lettuce at the grocery store to whip up a salad. So that's my biggest thing, to make sure that you're not always eating takeout. And just to make it fun. A lot of people just look at cooking like a chore. And if you're, you know, excited about what you're going to cook each night, mm-hmm. then that goes a long way into getting you into the kitchen and not just going to grab, you know, a pizza on the way home.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. What, in terms of budgeting as well, would you, in terms of just trying to stick to a plan and things like that, where, because you'd mentioned earlier that that you did grow up well in the sense that that food was always really well done, and some tips that perhaps if somebody doesn't have, you know, just a lot of money in terms of creating things.
I would cut back on meat.
Okay.
And especially, we try to eat as much organic meat as possible, mm-hmm. especially, you know, beef and chicken. So I would, you know, have meat, but, you know, maybe just have it a few times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Pastas are great because they're one of those cupboard empties in my book. You know, if you have a couple of tomatoes in the fridge and you have some capers in the cupboard or something that, you know, and some cheese, any kind of cheese really can go into pasta, it's really easy to whip something up like that and still keep yourself on a budget.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, pasta is definitely a really good one to have, and just keeping things really basic for budgeting.
Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, I'm sure there's websites too where you can look up budget-friendly recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, always keep a few of those in your arsenal that are just easy go-to recipes when, you know, things are maybe a little bit tighter.
Is there anything you'd consider that should be staples that everybody should have in their home? Like in terms of, well, not everybody, the average person, let's put it that way.
Well, the baker in me always likes to say, you know, butter, sugar, flour, eggs. Those are my big four to always make sure I always have in the house. But in terms of meal planning, yeah, pasta's a big one. Some fresh vegetables.
Mm.
You know, tomatoes are always easy to throw into a lot of dishes. We always try to keep rice and other grains that are really important to keep in the house. Those really can make your meal planning a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And garlic is a big one. It keeps for a long time. It adds so much flavor to dishes. You can't really go wrong. Flavoring things, I think, are really important to keep on as staples, like lemon.
Mm-hmm. And I was actually going to ask about garlic. Is it true that if both people eat garlic that you can't taste it when you're kissing someone?
I don't know. I will go and experiment.
I'll do the same, and we may have to do a follow-up show just to share the results on that one. So.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
You're welcome. And any last-minute advice you'd want to recommend in terms of if anybody wanted to book in terms of the Valentine's Day? I hope that's not a Freudian slip that I am stumbling over the word Valentine's Day, which is usually, you know, my whole theory is Valentine's Day is 365 days a year. So,
absolutely. I think a lot of people like to think that it's not, you know, it's not just a Hallmark holiday,
mm-hmm.
And you just want to, you know, take care of somebody all year round. If people are just looking for help, they can, you know, email me, Michelle, at inthekitchencatering.com, and I can help talk them through the process and give them help if they need it at whatever level they're looking for.
That sounds fantastic, and I had a weird thought about this, and I don't know if you've done this yet, but as the future evolves and there's things like Skype, and I keep thinking of myself where I actually check things on YouTube sometimes when I get stuck when I'm cooking, would you consider actually if somebody, say, who's listening, say, in Europe or somewhere else, doing a couple's cooking class but actually doing it via Skype where they say they have a projector on the other side?
That would be really interesting to do.
Okay.
I don't know if it might be a challenge because you really do have to show people with cooking.
Hmm.
Because it is, you know, unless maybe my webcam was showing me in my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things like holding a piping bag or holding a knife properly are often things you have to show people.
Okay.
So I never say never. I would try anything, but but it's much more fun to be there in person.
Definitely. Well, there's that connection when you actually have people face-to-face, which is hard to do, because I've always been curious about that, because I've got some coaches that we've had that both fitness coaches as well as lifestyle coaches who actually do a lot of their work online. And I've always mm-hmm. been curious about that, just how that works. So mm-hmm. I was wondering in terms of if cooking, how that might fit.
And, you know, the whole theme of the show tonight has been about connections between mm-hmm. people. And, you know, I am the first to say that I have made many friends around the world because of social media. And I would never turn anyone down who wanted to try something like that. I think it would be lots of fun.
So listeners out there, you know who you need to connect with. So, if I'm just going to get you to plug your website one more time.
www.inthekitchencatering.com.
Inthekitchencatering.com. Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Oh, and by the way, I did play Robert Plant's Ship of Fools at the very top of the show, and that was dedicated to the lovely Mr. I can't even say my boyfriend's name, but anyways, it's dedicated to my boyfriend, and I'm blushing now. You've been listening to the show, and we will be back next week. Until then.
Walking alone at night can be scary!
Stop right there, student. Why walk alone when you can call SafeWalk? The safety and comfort of everyone on campus is important. That's why we're here.
SafeWalk is a free, student-run foot patrol service with two-person co-ed teams that will meet you and accompany you anywhere on campus to make sure you get there safely.
Keep an eye out for our bright red reflective jackets and signature foot logo, and let your next walk be with us.
What a huge relief! Now I'll never have to worry about the terrors that could happen when walking through such a big campus at night.
For a walk, you can call 604-822-5355. Use one of our direct line phones located in some of the campus libraries. Use one of the big blue phone booths. Or even ask campus security to contact us.
If you see walkers around campus and you'd like them to accompany you, stop and ask.